hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports. Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The National Football League officially kicks off a new season later Thursday night in the western U.S. state of Denver, Colorado. The Denver Broncos will host the Carolina Panthers in a rematch of Super Bowl 50. Our VOA sports fans will remember the Broncos beat the Panthers 24-10 in the Super Bowl on February 7th earlier this year. Meanwhile, the NFL team based here in the Washington area, the Washington Redskins, will officially open their season Monday night, September 12th, with a home game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Ricky Jean-Francois is a defensive end for the Redskins. Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department contacted Ricky by telephone and asked him, how excited are you about the new NFL season?
Oh, man, I'm overly excited. Been waiting on the season to come about. Been waiting on to get the whole DMV out of the house and back onto the football field in FedEx Stadium. It's going to be an amazing season. I just want everybody to make sure they're there to enjoy it like we are.
What are some of the things that people who follow the NFL can expect from the Redskins this year that is different than last year?
You're going to expect more explosive plays on offense because due to the weapons we have, Jordan Reed, Vernon Davis, now Paul, DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, Crowder, Ross. We have so many weapons on offense. I think we're going to have an explosive offense this year. On defense, we're going to be a stingy, nasty defense, trying to get a turnover, trying to put Kirk Cousins in the best position and even score ourselves on defense if we have to. And we have those games when we're going back and forth with another good defense on the other side of the ball.
How about the first game being against Pittsburgh? A lot of pundits have the Steelers as a team from the AFC that might have a chance to make it to the Super Bowl.
It's great to play a team like that, a team that's a playoff team each and every other year, and a team that's a Super Bowl contender each and every other year. So it's good to start the season off against a team like that, especially with the special quarterback they have with Big Ben, explosive receiver Antonio Brown, and D'Angelo Williams in the backfield. He's ageless, can run the ball as many times as he wants, and can do it for as many years as he can. But this is a team to start the season off, especially at home.
Ricky, the sunny side of sports has an audience all around the world, but I'm sure that for some of our audience, the NFL is just one big game at the end of January or early in February, and that's the Super Bowl. I'm hoping you can explain to our listeners what it's like to be an NFL player and how long the season really lasts, from the off-season conditioning and mini camps in the spring to training camp in the summer to the season finally starting in September and then the regular season ending in early January. What is the full encompassing nature of the NFL like?
It almost feels like it goes 365 days a year. If you're a blessed team, you're in the playoffs. If you're a great team, you're in the Super Bowl. Once February comes, you know, you might get a month or two off. Some guys don't take a few weeks off, and they're back on the grind trying to accomplish another goal of getting back to the Super Bowl or either winning a Super Bowl. And you got the offseason coming up in April. A lot of teams start mid-April. Last year, we started late April, you know, going all the way to June. OTAs kicked in, you know, get all you guys back to get a feel. Got the team all back together, then take another break, I think like a month, if not mistaken, through the time between June and July, the end of July, you know, you're back at it again for camp, 2-3 weeks. Some teams go a month at a time, so you're practicing every day. You're not home anymore. Some teams take off and go to different places. Like I know the Saints go to West Virginia. The Dallas Cowboys go out to California. So a lot of teams move around. We ourselves, we go to Richmond, Virginia. So, you know, you got a few weeks away from the family. You know, you miss them and everything. I miss my son while I was going to my wife. And we're back home now. Preseason's over. That's 4 weeks of going at it against the same guy each and every day. Didn't get a chance to play against other teams in the preseason. Now the season is coming up. You got 17 weeks. You get one off week, and you get 16 weeks to play. Sometimes you may play on a Sunday one week and then play on a Thursday of the next week. Like, your games can be so close. You can play two games within 5 to 6 days. So you got to be conditioned. And, you know, you do that enough, you know, you get a chance to go into the playoffs. AFC, NFC, you try to battle it out for the 4 to 3 games. Luckily, you have a bye week, so you might have to play two to get to the Super Bowl. Some teams got to, you know, got to grind it out, got to start from the wild card and go all the way there. You have somebody like the New York Giants that did it once before. Arizona Cardinals did the same thing once before. And then you got the Super Bowl beginning of February. I don't know the exact date this year. I know somewhere got to be the first few days of February. And then that's how the whole season goes. I almost feel like it's 365 days a year.
Speaking of the Super Bowl, you played in the Super Bowl in 2013. It was the end of the 2012 season as a member of the 49ers. What was that experience like for you? First of all, it was an exciting game. It came down to the last play when the 49ers threw an incomplete pass into the end zone. But it's also memorable because it was the night that the power went out in the Superdome in New Orleans. What are some of your memories from that game that you take away?
Just seeing all the camera flashes, seeing how crazy the media is, crazy. All your fans took off. We had everybody coming from San Francisco. Baltimore had all their people coming from the DMV. Just walking around in the streets and just seeing the fans and just walking in the building was like it was a different demeanor, like it was a different setting. You just knew it. You could have kept your eyes closed and not realized where you were, but you could just feel the intensity, the everything that was just balling up to the point of kickoff and just running around doing warm-ups. You see cameras everywhere. Everyone is taking a picture of you. You get to see guys from the Hall of Fame that comes in. For us, it was Roger Craig, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott. You had guys like that on the sideline for us. Baltimore had a few of their guys, too. It's a wonderful experience, but it's a reason you grind so hard for 365 days to get that moment to just take in, to take pictures and just remember that. Just in case you get a chance to win, you want to be able to remember everything. Even if you lose, you want to remember everything. It just shows you how hard you work throughout the year just to get to this point and have a chance to be in it. Because not a lot of NFL players can say they played in the Super Bowl, let alone even say they even made it to a playoff.
Right, as a Cleveland native, I'm still waiting to see my Cleveland Browns make it to the Super Bowl for the first time, so I can understand that.
Yeah.
So what's something that you've been able to do in your life because you managed to get to the point where you're an NFL player? What's something that you don't think you would have been able to do otherwise?
I think I wouldn't have the avenues to meet other people, rub shoulders, have connections with different people. Like with a career, I thought I wouldn't. A career that I would never think I would be into. A lot of people said I need to do broadcasting, you know, sports anchor, things of that sort. I never had my mind stuck to it, but everybody kept telling me I was good at it. And that was one avenue. I'd have met everybody from ESPN, from CNN, all types of news stations, sports stations. And I had a chance to be able to sit down and talk to them or either work with them or get tips and advice from them before I go on further with my career and plus keep making myself better with the broadcasting and such other things.
That's Ricky Jean-Francois of the Washington Redskins, the National Football League club based here in the Washington area. And Ricky was talking with Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department. And we'll hear more of Dan's conversation with Ricky during Friday's Sunny Side of Sports. Also, Dan has an article on the new NFL season at the VOA Learning English webpage. Go to learningenglish.voanews.com. Once again, that address, learningenglish.voanews.com. The Basketball Hall of Fame will officially enshrine 10 new members on Friday night in the northeastern U.S. city of Springfield, Massachusetts. Headlining the Hall of Fame class of 2016 are former NBA stars Shaquille O'Neal, Yao Ming, and Allen Iverson. Big Shaq played 19 seasons in the NBA, averaging nearly 24 points and 11 rebounds a game. Shaq won four NBA titles, three with the Los Angeles Lakers and one with the Miami Heat. Big Shaq was also named League Most Valuable Player in 2000, and he was a three-time MVP of the NBA Finals. Meanwhile, the Chinese giant Yao Ming was the number one pick in the 2002 NBA draft. Yao spent his entire NBA career with the Houston Rockets, earning All-Star honors eight times before announcing his retirement 5 years ago because of injuries. Allen Iverson was a small but fearless guard who played 14 seasons in the NBA, averaging almost 27 points and 6 assists a game. Iverson was named the NBA's Most Valuable Player in 2001. He was an 11-time league All-Star, and four times he led the league in scoring. There are four posthumous inductees to the Basketball Hall of Fame. They are Zelmo Beatty, who spent most of his pro career in the now-defunct American Basketball Association, former referee Daryl Gerritsen, former coach John McClendon, and Cumberland Posey, a basketball star in the early 1900s. Posey, by the way, is also enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame. A twofer from Cumberland Posey, Basketball and Baseball Hall of Fame. The three other people who will be inducted on Friday night are Jerry Reinsdorf, longtime owner of the Chicago Bulls, whose club dominated the NBA by winning six championships during the 1990s. Tom Izzo, the head coach at Michigan State, where he has led the Spartans to the 2000 NCAA title and seven trips to the Final Four. And last, but certainly not least, Cheryl Swoops, a three-time Olympic gold medalist for the USA, a four-time WNBA champion, and a three-time WNBA Most Valuable Player. Congratulations to all the Basketball Hall of Fame inductees.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Boxing news now on the Voice of America. Ghana's Richard Comey goes after the vacant IBF world title later Friday night when he fights American Robert Easter Jr. in Reading, Pennsylvania. Our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moueta, says it's shaping up as a tough bout for Comey.
Very important fight, Sonny. September 9th in Reading, Pennsylvania. Richard Comey of Ghana versus Robert Easter of Cincinnati. These are two undefeated lightweights. We'll expect action. But, Sonny, the house fighter is Robert Easter. And if you cannot knock out the house fighter, there's no way you can win a decision. Al Haymon, Premier Boxing Championship, is behind Robert Easter. So homeboy from Ghana needs to fight not only Easter, the judges, the referee. He needs to win by knockout.
Nnamdi, September, big month in boxing. We have two of the sport's biggest names, Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, and Canelo Saul Alvarez from Mexico. They're both going to be in action. Let's begin with Triple G. What's he got ahead of him, Nnamdi?
Sonny, that fight is September 10th in London, and they're looking at the sellout crowd. He's going to take on a fighter that is basically moving up from the welterweight, which is 147 pounds, to 160 pounds. The big question becomes, will Kell Brook have the power to push Triple G back or even hurt Triple G? But this is boxing, Sonny. This is the sweet science. Anything can happen. If Brook decides to go in there and fight, and he ends the fight on his feet, and no knockdown, no knockout, he will basically expose Triple G. And I've always said it to you, Sonny, Triple G is overrated.
So you're saying Brook might be able to win a points decision, Nnamdi?
That's the only way. He cannot go toe-to-toe with Triple G. If he falls into the trap of thinking he can knock out Triple G, he'd be in deep trouble. He'd be knocked out cold in his hometown. He needs to box. He needs to run. But can he run for 12 rounds? Because some of those body shots can really take away the legs, you know. So if he can run, touch and go, pick, just pick up the fight and make it an easy 12-round decision, Triple G will be exposed.
Nnamdi, I know many fight fans want to see Triple G go against Canelo. That won't be happening in 2016. But Canelo is fighting this month. Talk about that.
Sonny, September 17th, the Cowboy Stadium in Dallas. He's taking on Liam Smith for the WBO Junior Middleweight title. And you ask yourself, why is a man who was once the middleweight champion of the world going down to 154 pounds to take on Liam Smith, who in the fight game don't really know about or care about? People believe he's scared of Triple G, running away from Triple G, ducking Triple G.
Thanks, Nnamdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny, and sporty Paralympic greetings to you.
Paralympics underway in Rio? What's trending there, Andrew?
Well, they are underway. A lot of images of the opening ceremonies so far, particularly Aaron Wheels Fotheringham of Great Britain, who is a wheelchair, BMX trick artist, and went down this ramp and jumped through this huge hoop in the middle of Maracanã Stadium to the delight of everybody. It was really impressive. But a lot of people are noting on social media that the Paralympics aren't getting covered as nearly as much as the Olympics, and they're very disappointed that these moments are hard to find. Using the hashtag Paralympics, you can find things on social media, a lot of conversation using that hashtag. And as Twitter has done in the past, they have a little icon emoji that they put with that Paralympics hashtag, so you can track along with that. The other big moment from the opening ceremony was Marcia Malsar. Now, she's a Brazilian para-athlete, and she was carrying the flame, and she actually fell. It was very slick at Maracanã Stadium's pouring rain, and she fell, dropped the flame. She picked herself up, grabbed the flame back, and kept walking. And so many people on social media saying that exemplifies the true spirit of the Paralympics. You keep going, you keep fighting. And she actually, fun fact, was the first Brazilian to win a gold medal in the Paralympics when she won in 1984. So an accomplished athlete and an accomplished drive and determination to get back up in the middle of that full packed Maracanã Stadium and say, no, I'm going to keep going.
Andrew, one hashtag that was trending last month during the Olympics in Rio was Lion Ryan. Lion Ryan. And I understand Mr. Lochte is back in the news.
Mr. Lochte is back in the news. He's been suspended for 10 months over that Rio incident. So he'll be out of the pool for drying off for a good 10 months. And he's set to lose about $100,000 because of that. Now, social media, the overwhelming opinion that I've seen is that he should have gotten more. People are looking for more punishment for him, especially when compared to Hope Solo. Now, you remember Hope Solo, the women's team goalie for the U.S., called Sweden cowards when they beat the U.S. women's national team in the Olympics, and she got 6 months worth of suspension, which effectively ended her career. So people saying 6 months for her, saying that they were cowards, 10 months for him for having this whole fabricated robbery story and creating all this chaos. They said that it's not really an equitable punishment. He should have a greater amount of time suspended.
And Andrew, I understand the three other swimmers linked to that incident in Rio got less time than Lochte.
Yeah, I think that he's been throughout all this kind of the public face, and he was the one who kind of dug his own grave, so to speak, going on TV and making all these claims, and the other three kind of, I think, laid low. So I think his celebrity kind of did him in with that. But the good news for him is that he'll have plenty of time for Dancing with the Stars, because he is going to be on the next season of Dancing with the Stars, so he won't have to deal with any pool time during that time.
Earlier in the program, Andrew, Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department was chatting with Ricky Jean-Francois of the Washington Redskins, the NFL club based here in Washington. Redskins don't open their season for a few more days, but Denver will be a hotbed of NFL action tonight, I understand.
Yeah, it's a lot of people very excited about the kickoff tonight and then into this weekend, Sunday, the first football Sunday of the football season. A lot of people thrilled that football's coming back. And Twitter is thrilled, too, because what they've done is they've released emojis, team emojis for specific hashtags. Now, this is something that we talked about with the Olympics, the different sports and the different countries each had a little flag emoji that went with it. Well, this is for all of the NFL teams. If you use these specific hashtags, you will get a little logo that pops up. So take, for example, my New York Jets. If you use hashtag JetUp, you'll get a little Jets logo with that. Or hashtag FlyEaglesFly for the Philadelphia Eagles. It'll come up with their little logo. Now, some of them are just the team names. Hashtag Chiefs for the Kansas City Chiefs. Hashtag Jaguars for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Some of them are a little more interesting. Hashtag RiseUp. It goes with the Atlanta Falcons. So
okay.
I guess that's their theme, rise up, because, you know, they're in flight as Falcons. I like this one for the Chicago Bears. Hashtag feed da Bears. D-A. Da Bears. So there's a lot of team pride showed in these hashtags. But, yeah, Twitter posting those out, and I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of those from tonight in through Sunday, the first full day of football for the football season.
Andrew, you mentioned your beloved New York Jets. New York, of course, also a hotbed of action for tennis the past couple of weeks. What's the latest at the U.S. Open?
Yeah, it's going to be a busy sports weekend between the football and then the U.S. Open wrapping up. But we have the two semifinals set, or we have both sides for the men's and women's. We have Novak Djokovic, world number one, who's going to take on Gael Monfils, who we talked about is having an amazing season. He won the City Open here in Washington. He's had a really great hard court season, so he's made it to the semifinals of the U.S. Open. On the other side, you have Stan Wawrinka of Switzerland taking on Kei Nishikori of Japan. Now, Kei Nishikori knocked off Andy Murray, who is one of the favorites to win this event, in kind of an odd fashion. Now, we talked about the other day, Ana Konja of Croatia, she was about to serve, and this beep or blare, whatever you want to call it, this noise went off of the PA system, and she got startled, and she recovered and was able to serve out the match. Well, Andy Murray was playing against Kei Nishikori in the quarterfinals, and the same thing happened, that same noise. And apparently it rattled him, because after that he lost seven straight games and ended up losing the match. So a lot of people saying that that was maybe the reason he got rattled, because of that noise. Other people pointing out social media that at one point during the match there was a butterfly that was, I guess, in Andy Murray's way, and he swatted at it with his racket. And so they said it was the ghost of the butterfly that caused him to lose, that it was some kind of superstitious something like that.
Andrew, you mentioned Kei Nishikori bidding for, I think, his first Grand Slam title. Would you say that he might be the biggest name Asian player in the tennis ranks since maybe Michael Chang? I know Chang was an American, but he had ties to Asia.
And in fact, Michael Chang, who won that French Open in the late 80s, is actually Kei Nishikori's coach. So it's very funny. You see a lot of those old players become coaches for these young guys, Ivan Lendl, Boris Becker, all coaching these young players today. So, yeah, I think he certainly is, I think, the highest-ranked Asian player since Michael Chang, for sure. So we'll see those semifinals play out in the next couple days, and then we'll see the women's semifinals play out tonight. So we'll talk about who's going to be in the finals tomorrow, because we'll have a final set for Saturday. So we'll chat about that tomorrow.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the September 8th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A preventative vaccination campaign against yellow fever was launched on August 17th in the Democratic Republic of Congo by the government. The United States, through USAID and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, has provided crucial support to the response to the epidemic of yellow fever. USAID used its approximately $1 million established PREDICT project to resupply L'Institut National de Recherche Biomédicale with needed materials to continue yellow fever diagnostics. USAID also worked through an existing partner to assist CDC to procure needed materials and person time for a study investigating immunogenicity of fractional minimal dosing of yellow fever vaccine. It is estimated that the use of fractional minimal dosing in this campaign can confer up to a year of immunity for vaccinated individuals. The study will help establish if protection actually lasts longer than 1 year, thereby easing pressure on a limited global stockpile of yellow fever vaccine. In terms of technical support, several experts from the CDC and USAID are working with the Congolese Ministry of Health, INRB for data management, quality assurance, and daily updates. The U.S. government, through its experts, regularly participates in meetings and contributes to the identification of training needs and development programs. Many of the platforms developed to implement a successful mass polio vaccination campaign have been utilized to support the current yellow fever campaign. USAID has been funding Emerging Pandemic Threat, EPT, activities in the DRC since 2010, including training health workers to prevent, detect, and respond to epidemic threats and building lab capacity, and has an EPT budget of $17 million for fiscal year 2015 to 2017. The U.S. government, which is also the third largest donor to Gavi, the Alliance vaccine, supports the introduction of new vaccines through the routine system, while also providing support to the global stockpile of a few essential vaccines, including yellow fever, which can be deployed for targeted campaigns. Gavi provides over $10 million for yellow fever vaccine and operational costs to support the current vaccination campaign. The U.S. is proud to work with its partner, the Democratic Republic of Congo, to help protect the Congolese people from a deadly threat, yellow fever.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.